It's a pleasure being here. The fact that my talk is quite funny instead of the body is called a graphene, and I'm next to the starting where Andrea stops and is so the outline of the talk is both structure and density of space.
Just
yeah.
Before you continue.
Oh,
well, because the recording is for posterity.
So. It's on the internet. Live.
So the outline of the talk is bent structure and density of space of a bias bilayer graphene, gap versus density electronic and the theory for screening, surface state and magnetic field effects. I'm not sure that I have time to go through all of this, so let's see. Okay, this is the first topic, bent structure and density of state of a bilayer graphene. And the Hamiltonian, I'm depicting it here as a drawing. So the system is like that. You have a plane of graphene, and on top of this plane you have another plane of graphene in what is called the Bernal stacking. There is one atom on top of the other atom, and then this one here is in the middle of the hexagon. And this is a minimal model, the model I'm considering. You have hopping to first nearest neighbors in plane, and then there is the perpendicular hopping among the atoms that are directly connected on top of each other. And that's essentially the Hamiltonian. It's a quite simple one. So you have four atoms per unit cell, which means four bands. And the analytical expression for the four bands can be obtained. They are represented here, and you can see that the momentum dependence is only on the energy dispersion of a single layer. So a single layer is present in this sense here and there. Okay, there you have the four. V is here. Oh, what is V? Yeah. So V, let me go back. V is an electrostatic potential difference between the two layers. Okay. All right. Now, when we look to the bond structure of this biased bilayer graphene, what you see is that at the Dirac point, you don't have a minimum anymore, but the minimum is a little bit off. And the dispersion has this shape, sort of a Mexican head dispersion that Andrea Game does not believe, right?
When I see it.
When you see it, okay. The gap between the two, the valence band and the conduction band is represented here, and the experimental relevant region is this one around zero. Okay, and the expression for the gap, you see it here. If V is much smaller than T perp, which is the experimental relevant case, this number is big, this number is also big, and the gap is proportional essentially to V. So the difference, the potential difference between the planes is essentially proportional to the gap. All right. Now, for the density of state, I am representing here first the density of state of the unbiased graphene bilayer, so the potential difference between the two layers is zero, and it's finite at the neutrality point, and that's because the bands are parabolic at those points. Okay? So for a single layer of graphene, you have a linear vanishing linear density of state, and for the normal bilayer, you have a finite density of state. When you go to the biased graphene bilayer, what you see is a divergency at the neutrality point. You can understand this by approximating the dispersion around that point by a Mexican head relation dispersion, and if you compute the density of states for this band, you get a square root singularity. So there is this question here whether the biased bilayer could have a ferromagnetic ground state if you apply the well-known Stoner criterion. Okay. So a large density of state, a small Coulomb interaction, and this would give a ferromagnetic ground state. I don't know how simple it is to study this experimentally, but it's something that is certainly...
What do the bands look like for the unbiased layer?
Pardon?
What do the bands look like for the unbiased
layer? Oh, they are parabolic.
But are they
four
or
two? It's four. Let me see if I... Maybe I have it here. Oops. Maybe I have it in... Here you can actually see. So the dashed line is the band.
Oh, okay.
Okay. For the...
And in that picture, where is the point where the density of states diverges?
What do you mean?
No.
This one here. Yeah, it's at the Mexican head.
The zero is the
Fermi
energy.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Okay.
So far, just to clarify, at zero energy, it's actually zero. There's just an edge where it diverges at the bottom of the Mexican hat, right? So the energy at the bottom.
Yeah, it's like in here. You have a minimum, so you have a gap. So it diverges.
Constant density of
yeah. I'm still confused. I'm being dumb, I know, but
yeah, can you just clarify?
Can you go back?
Yes.
So in that picture, the density states. I see a big density states in the middle. Is that the one I should be looking at?
That's the one you should be looking at.
Yeah, but it's not at the edge of the band. Mm-hmm. Of a band.
Or it must be zero in the middle.
Yes. And then it diverges there.
But it's zero.
It's here in the middle.
Oh, okay. I just can't see it. Okay.
Understood. It's not represented. Okay.
There's a zero on.
Can you do it on the board? Maybe. Can you maybe draw it more thin?
Well, it's something like this. It goes like this, then it diverges, then it's zero, and then it does again like this.
For the case when it's unbiased.
For the case where this unbiased is just something like that. Okay. All right. Okay, so here, this is an ARPS experiment from a Berkeley group, and you actually see here the dispersion relation for a graphene bias graphene bilayer. In this experiment, they have a graphene bilayer on top of a silicon carbide substrate, and that contributes a given amount of electronic density to the bilayer. And there you have the theoretical, say, representation, and you see this maximum and the minimum, which could be the Mexican head dispersion like. Now, when you cover the open surface of the bilayer graphene with potassium, then you see that the gap closes, okay? And then when you add more potassium, then the gap opens again. So there is a relation between the electrostatic potential between the layers and the electronic density. So we need a model to describe this type of effect, and that's what I will be talking.
Where are the states in between coming from?
Pardon me?
What are the states inside the gap?
It's probably this order. I would like to. I've no idea. Yeah, I've no idea what the states are. They don't say it in the paper. They don't comment on that. I would like them to be surface states, as you will see. Okay. So here again, I have the dispersion relation either for the unbiased case, which is this dashed line, and then the full line is the band structure for the biased case. And in the experiments before, they have computed the electrostatic potential difference between the layers. These are the green circles here. And we have developed a theory which fits very well, I would say, except for large densities, the experimental data. And that's the theory for V as function of density that I will be described. I'll be describing next, in the next transparency. So gap versus the electronic density and screening. So what I'm representing here is the device that the Manchester group actually uses. So you have here the graphene bilayer. On top, there are dopants, which is this NH3 at a concentration N0. And then you have the silicon wafer and then a gate here. Okay. So by varying the gate voltage, you can actually induce some amount of charge density in the bilayer. And the same by having dopants on top of the bilayer, you can also change the density of the bilayer by some amount. Okay. So these will act both these dopants here and the gate there. They will act as a plane of charge, and you can compute the electric field in the silicon oxide slab by just simple electrostatics from the electric field. You can determine the gate voltage, and then N1 is the concentration induced by the gate due to charge conservation. You know that the total amount of density is equal to the charge induced by the dopant plus the charge induced by the gate. So you replace N1 by that, and you have a relation between the gate voltage and the density, which allows to extract the value of N0. Okay, so here you have the experimental points. So gate as function, electronic density as function of gate voltage. So these points are from the Manchester group, and the red curve is the fit to this expression. And from this, we can extract the value of N0, so we know what is the amount of charge the dopants are contributing to the bilayer. Okay. So now it comes the question. Now it comes the question of determining the relation between the electrostatic difference between the two layers and the gate voltage and the potential voltage between the two layers. So you have here this plane of charge coming from the gate, and then that plane of charge coming from the dopant. You zoom in what is going on. There is an electric field created by this plane of charge here, another electric field created by this plane of charge there. If you add them together, you get finally an expression for the potential difference between the two layers. Okay. Now again, using charge neutrality, this N1 can be expressed in terms of the density, the total density of induced charge in the plane, and you obtain an expression for V, which is related to the density you induce in the bilayer. So if you remember the experiment I have showed you before, there is a relation between V and N, and this is the simplest relation one can obtain from these considerations. So varying the density is the same as varying V. One important aspect of this experiment is that there is an asymmetry between holes and electrons. So because of these two here, which is coming from the contribution of the dopants. Okay? So the properties for electrons are no longer symmetric to the properties of electrons. Another interesting aspect is that the gap vanishes when the density is equal to 2 times the density of the dopant. So when the contribution from these dopants here and the contribution from the gate there are the same, there is no gap. That's what you see in the Rothenberg's experiment, where you vary the covering of potassium and then the density, the gap closed, because the density of charges from one plane is the same as from the other contribution. Okay, now because the two planes are now at different electrostatic potential, there is a charge necessary. There is a charge imbalance between the two planes, which I'm representing here by delta N divided by 2. Again, you use electrostatic, simple electrostatic argument. You compute the electric field. You compute the electric field due to the planes of charge, and you get a contribution which is proportional to the imbalance of charge. So there is, in addition to the value of the electrostatic potential computed before, there is this additional contribution, and the final expression for the electrostatic potential between the two planes is what you had before plus the imbalance of charge. Okay. Now, the imbalance of charge depends itself on the potential, on the total potential difference. Okay. So as you can see here, the imbalance of charge is simply the contribution of the electronic density from one layer minus the contribution from the other layer, and this is the Hamiltonian of the biased bilayer problem. In the diagonal you have V, so V depends on delta N, and this means that you need a self-consistent procedure in order to solve the problem for the gap. It's possible to obtain these expressions in detailed form, I don't want to waste much time on that. So I move to the experimental results. So what we have computed, one of the quantities we have computed using this theory is the cyclotron mass of the Bayes bilayer problem. The data are from the Manchester group experiment, and you have here in black the what we called the screened contribution, which contains the self-consistent solution, and using dots, it's the unscreened contribution. So the cell, there is no, it's not the difference in the density of charge is not taken into account. So you can actually see that for electrons, the fit is reasonably all right, but for holes, it's not that good, and it seems to be somewhere in between the unscreened case and the screened case. We have no explanation why the fitting is much better here than in there. It seems that the theory is somewhere in between the two limits we have considered. Okay. Now in this plot, you have the gap as function of the density, and you see that the gap closes at 3.6. 10 to the minus 12 centimeters minus 2, which is exactly twice the value of N0. So you actually confirm what I have said before. So the next topic is about surface states. For a single layer, it is known since the work of Fujita that there is surface states in the system. Okay. They form a band of states at exactly at zero energy. So we ask ourselves the question whether in the bilayer problem we could have as well surface states. So we set up the bilayer problem in a geometry where you have here a zigzag edge and then down here another zigzag edge. Okay. So this is the bilayer. Is the bilayer structure. The Hamiltonian, it's two copies here in red and blue, two copies of a single graphene plane with zigzag edges, and then you have T-perp coupling the two layers together. And then you ask whether this system supports zero energy states, a band of zero energy states, as it happens for the single layer. So the equations. The tight binding equations, if you ask the question whether zero energy states can exist, are depicted around here. As in the one in the single layer problem, you can only have exactly zero energy states in the semi-infinite case. Here is exactly the same, so you cannot in fact satisfy these equations for a finite stripe, but you can satisfy them for semi-infinite bilayer graphene. Okay, so if you look closely, you see that the first two equations are coupled together, and then again here, you also see that these two are coupled together. So if you have, say, a semi-infinite plane starting at zero unit cell and beyond, that's the set that applies, or if you have a semi-infinite plane starting at the n unit cell, then this is the set of equations that applies. Another thing that you immediately see is if you choose alpha 1 equals 0, so this is 0, this line here vanishes identically, and then you are faced with the same type of equations you find for a single layer. So this means that the same type of edge states that you find, or surface states that you find in the single layer, you can also find them here. But on top of that, there are new types of edge states which are not present, or surface states. It's this designation of edge states sometimes is confusing because people tend to link edge states to the quantum Hall effect. So it's edge states or surface states. Okay. So as I said before, the two equations are coupled together, and that's the relation between the amplitudes of the tight binding model in the unit cell n and how they are related to the amplitudes in the unit cell n plus 1. So this is for one semi-infinite bilayer, and this is for the other semi-infinite bilayer. It's the other way around. Okay. Now you can iterate this equation a number of times, and what you have to do is to compute this product of this matrix. You can actually do that. It's quite simple.
Just a question on these surfaces. They are, is it correct to say that they are non-chiral edge states?
Non-chiral?
Meaning that it's not that, let's say, right movers are at one edge and left movers are at the other edge, but right movers are
not right in time.
No.
So they're edge, I would say they're, I mean, you correct me if I'm wrong, that they're edge states, but the difference with the quantum Hall effect is that they don't have one edge.
No, this here, they are not edge states in the sense that they are chiral. They are not.
But they are edge states because they're localized.
They are edge states because they live on the edge of the sample. Exactly.
It's a surface state.
It's a surface state.
And they disperse?
What's the difference between surface? With surface, you mean edge, right?
Yes, edge.
With surface, I mean edge.
The more edge states are one from the state. They are chiral, right?
Yeah, I understand. So I'm just confused because you used the word. You said they're not edge states; they're surface states. But
no, they are edge states.
Surfaces,
but they are not the same kind you have in the quantum Hall effect.
That's
what I said.
So does that mean there, at each energy, there are two states?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Okay. So if you do that. So if you iterate the equation a number of times, you get finally a relation between the amplitude at the unit cell n, starting with the amplitude at the unit cell n equals 0. Okay. Now, as you can see, there are two solutions. One is putting alpha 1 equal 0. I have already discussed that one for you. And then the other one is putting this guy equal 1 and this one equal 0. So let's look how this surface states look like. Okay, here they are. Okay, so here in black or here in black you have the usual type of surface states in a single graph in bilayer. Then in red is the new type of edge state. Okay, so you see that there is an important difference between the usual edge state and the new one, and the difference is that they have a finite amplitude of electronic density more into the bulk. Okay, so it would be interesting to set up some experiment to measure the presence of these new type of edge states in the graphene bilayer. For a single layer, the people have looked at that. So these are experimental results from Nihimi. And they looked at scanning tunneling spectroscopy signal, which is proportional to the local density of state, and they looked at for a zigzag edge and for a armchair edge. So here you see an increase of the sign when you approach the edge of the sample, where for armchair edge case there isn't such an increase. So they took this as a signal of the presence of these edge states in a single graphene layer. So the same type of... Well, it's graphite. It's graphite. But they are looking only at the termination.
So was it a single sheet termination or by double sheet termination? Because on the surface of graphite, you can imagine a double stack.
Yeah. No, I don't know that. Okay. Now, what I've been talking about is for the unbiased case. So when you bias the system, what happens is the same type of edge states that you have in a single layer, they only shift up and down in energy, whether these new type of edge states, they become dispersive inside the gap. Okay. They cross at zero energy here, and this point is independent of V. That you can easily understand by doing first-order perturbation theory. Now the final topic is magnetic field effects. Okay, so I start here with the spectrum for the graphene bilayer computed from tight binding. So you have these zero-energy modes existing here, and then you have the other Landau levels. Just by counting the number of edge states that you have, you can obtain the value of the all conductivity. Here I'm representing a scaling relation between the energy and the quantum number, and to check how good the available approximations are. So for a single layer, you can actually see that the expression for a single layer as the square root of the quantum number, it's perfectly satisfied, where the approximation has some difference. So this approximation here is valid when gamma is much smaller than T. When you increase the magnetic field, you decrease the magnetic length, gamma increases and you start to violate this. So the situation is worse and worse as you move to higher magnetic fields. Okay. Now, when you look now at the Landau levels in the biased bilayer, so here I have it for the unbiased case. So it's the same, it's a zoom of the same picture I had before, and both with zigzags and the armchair terminations. Now, when you bias the system, you clearly, for the zigzag, for the armchair, sorry, case, you open a gap here. Whereas for the zigzag case, there are again states in the middle of the gap. So you have to look what these states are. And in the lower figure, I have a zoom in of what is going on in this region where the armchair case has a gap. So you see that there is states which are bulk Landau levels, and then the other, starting from a given point, then they became surface states, so states that live at the bulk of the system. Okay, so here is the same. You have here bulk Landau levels, and then they transform into edge states, and the same for here. So when you have the chemical potential where it is depicted between these two Landau levels here, the states that you cross are states that are located at the edge of the sample. So in practical terms, the system behaves as it has a gap. Okay? And that's the experimental plot you have already seen from Andreas' talk. You have here the quantum Hall effect. You have no plateau for the unbiased case, whereas for the biased case you have a plateau showing there, and that's because you have this gap opening between the two layers, between the two states, the particle and the whole state. Okay, one aspect worth mentioning is that for the biased case there is a KK prime asymmetry that you can understand starting from the Hamiltonian in the presence of a magnetic field. Okay, and here you can go through the process of computing this asymmetry. Let me show it to you better in the pictures, which I didn't stress. So here, if you look, if you can see these dotted lines, you see that, for example, this line is touching this Landau level here, but it's not touching that Landau level there. So they are not exactly at the same energy. So presumably, if you have a very clean sample and large fields, you may see this non-degenerate behavior in the all conductivity. I don't know if it's possible to do experimentally or not. In summary, we have presented tight binding description of the bias bilayer with band structure and gap, a description of the effective potential felt by the two layers, considering both the screen and unscreen case, a description of the cyclotron mass, the analysis of surface states in the bilayer and their evolution to dispersive states, and the Landau level analysis of the bilayer and the corresponding all conductance quantization. Last but not least, I did this in collaboration with several people that I'd like to acknowledge. Thank you very much.
The calculations were all done on the assumption that you have A, B stacked
yes.
bilayer.
That's the only one you can have here, right?
I'm sorry?
That's the only stacking you can have for this case.
Okay. If you have a graphite drawn on silicon carbide, we know that the first layer is slightly compacted due to the stress. Now the other layers, it gets relieved. We also notice some rotational disorder from leaves.
Okay.
In other words, there's a good chance that the layer stacking is not AB, maybe locally, but globally not.
I understand.
Now, the question is the calculations. Of course, that breaks the KK prime degeneracy, but if you don't have that experimentally, how would that filter through how would that look? What would change in your calculations if you assume some either rotational disorder or some that the first lattice constant is slightly different than the second one?
We are looking at that calculation right now.
And you globally say what you expect?
I have no idea.
No idea?
No.
Okay.
I have two questions.
Okay.
Question number one is gamma 3 comes from the two layers, which numerically is pretty large. And the edge where there is no phase induced cancellation between couplings of neighbors would be relevant, and everything that you're saying has to be revised.
Yes.
That's question number one. Question number two is why, is there anything I did wrong that just don't mention the previous
No. Why? No, there isn't anything you did wrong. I'm sorry.
Why do the quadratic coupling of the layers stable? I mean, why, when you switch on the coupling between the two layers and zero, how do you evolve? I don't quite see how the Dirac point, you can suddenly get a zero frequency. Do you have to fine-tune or have a coupling that seems a sufficient strength?
For having a parabolic dispersion?
Two things at
time. No, it's always there as long as you have T-perp.
How the thing with the two parabolic layers touching is?
Well,
but if I start with a V-shape, so two graphics, I don't quite see how I could avoid infinitesimal small.
If there are four bands, then you lead to the degeneracy.
It's a result of the.
But they already split linearly at the small.
It's because of this asymmetry in the coupling, just one sublattice that is coupled by the hopping.
Okay. The approximation of when only the next number couples take into account. And then what happens is that when you have two atoms which are above each other, just one above the other, they produce the split net. These are the high energy energies. And then when you go from one disconnected side to the other, you need to make two jumps. And this costs you two momentum gradients.
Right, so that's a way of thinking of it, but is it true just by symmetry arguments for AB's perfect AB stack?
So what? That the parabolic?
That it's parabolic,
no,
yeah.
No, because when you take into account the gamma 3 coupling, it's no more parabolic.
But actually, it's again Dirac.
You need to fine tune.
Yeah, but they
No, it's not in fine tuning, it's just the approximation.
They continue to cross, but they cross in a weird manner now.
It goes into four
Dirac points instead. But the question that there is, although Volod is saying that gamma 3 is sizable, I don't see any experimental evidence for ARPES or any other experiment that gamma 3 is that large. In fact, for instance,
I don't take the point that something is large or small. If you don't know,
you said
parameter, we do the perturbations here. The small parameter is a little bit small. But in principle, we treat it as finite, and we can draw the dispersions for any value of gamma 3.
Sure, but if I look at
it. For example, in ARPS, they fit the data with just a T-perp.
There is, and if you look at the ARPS data, there is no evidence for this trigonal distortion that this gamma 3 would show.
Oh.
Okay, yeah.
Then ask us
to speak. I think Stephen Louis, correct me if I'm wrong, showed that even for a single layer armchair, have an edge state or surface state.
It does not.
But when you go further into additional tunneling coefficient, you find that even armchair is conducted.
It has a surface state, that's what you're saying?
Yes.
It's not present in the tight binding calculation, so I don't know what
it
means.
It's dispersing, that's what you mean, is that?
Sorry? It's not tight binding, it's
I thought that the armchair had a gap.
That's right.
That's right.
It should show that generically the armchair and also the zigzag generically acquires a gap.
Well, when you get a watch, I think this gap collapses.